It's 88.5 FM, and I'm Sky Daniels, and I'm happy to welcome back Nico Case to the airwaves. We were talking right before we went on. Mike, you work a lot.
I work all the time, just like everyone else.
To say that you're out working, i.e. touring, which is a big part of it, which, you know, you're playing tonight in Los Angeles, and we'll talk about that in a moment. There's also been a level of creativity and activity that something has to be fueling this drive.
I think I just like to do it. I mean, I do work on it all the time. I've always been in a lot of bands, and I've always worked on several projects at once, so it doesn't really seem weird to me at all.
In this case, in Hell On, you know, you went in, you knew what you were going to do. You did work with Bjorn on it.
I did.
But you can turn around and at the same time work on two or three other projects, collaborate with, sit in, guest. It seems as if you just like the community of music around you too.
I do. And, you know, people mistake my solo records for being quote unquote solo records, but really it's me directing and collaborating with people. I'm the final say, and I produce the albums, but I write the material. But you know, I don't do that stuff by myself. Like, I write with Paul Rigby mostly. I can write songs on my own, but I find it to be lonely, and I don't like to do it. I never wanted to be in a band to be a solo artist. I wanted to be in a band to be with people and to make music. It is possible to make music all by myself, but it doesn't have the spark that it does with others, or the belly laughs, or the community, or, you know, there are times I do like to work on music by myself, but they're few and far between. I would not say that that is my usual way to do things. Like, lyrics I work on by myself, and I do that pretty much exclusively alone, but the actual music playing and singing and practicing I generally do with other people.
Who's helped you develop your sense of lyrics? Who's inspired you? What inspires you to come up with some of the fascinating wordplay that you express at times?
Well, I read a ton, and so that definitely has an influence. But it's funny you should ask that, because right now I'm on tour with my friend Dan Behar, who is a band called Destroyer. And Dan and Carl Newman, who Carl writes most of the songs for the New Pornographers, they are people I've been in a band with for the same amount of time as I've been in my own quote-unquote solo band. And when we were in our early 20s, you know, kind of hardcore punk rock was still kind of the main thing, and things were pretty macho still, and, you know, whatever you want to call it, the grunge music scene was happening. It was still all very macho. Like, a lot of the people in that scene weren't super macho, and they were way more progressive and open. But Carl and Dan were the first people I knew who used the word poetry. They weren't afraid to say the word poetry. And that really made an impact on me. It really stuck with me. And I'm like, nah, poetry is a really valuable thing. And I always listened to the words in songs, and I thought they were really important, and I could never understand people who didn't care what the words said.
Poetry versus Moon Spoon June, or anything else I can get to rhyme.
Yeah, because I'm not trained. I mean, I've never even passed English 101, but I still have the right to call it poetry if I want to. It falls, I don't know, the arts have these weird borderlands that overlap with each other, that nothing is quite definable as one thing or the other. It's like art lives as this weird borderland between, you know, science, physics,
dreams.
Like, there's mathematics, and then there's sort of a weird eyeballed mathematics, or instinctual spatial mathematics, and that's kind of where poetry is for me, I think. It's like when you can't quite figure out a way to say something and you need to represent it with sounds, that's kind of where.
When you talk about writing lyrics alone, that is the place where it's coming from somewhere inside, you know, how we define the muse. I don't know anyone who's been able to come into me and absolutely categorize, oh, the muse, this is how it works. For you, how does it work? How does inspiration become the source of a song?
Well, I never think of the muse, per se, as a concept. I think of it as like a gray electrical area of excitement that you can't really define. People call that the muse, I guess, but I don't know. I think it's subconscious, where I find I get most of my ideas doing something physical that my body knows how to do, like wash the dishes or take a shower. So your subconscious mind is, you know, hanging out because your mechanical, you know, I need to pick up the stick and stab it in the brontosaurus. I don't know.
We just experienced, you know, a calamity of fires, wildfires, and are still very much in the middle of people dealing with an unexpected force of nature suddenly changing their life plans. And you had a similar situation in which place where you live, the farm caught fire.
Yeah, it burned down. So I was in Sweden at the time, and so that it felt extra helpless not to be able to go there. But, you know, luckily for me, I'm fortunate enough to have really good people who were taking care of it for me. You know, one of those people being my boyfriend, partner, whatever you want to call him. You know, he was there. So I mostly felt just really bad that I couldn't be there for him, because it was really terrifying. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, there's animals to look after.
Yeah, you do.
He did a really good job. Like, everybody was fine. He was fine. So I really didn't care about the stuff. And it was crazy. The other night we were in Chico, California, and there were so many people I spoke to who had just lost their homes. And I think it was the first time I got really, like, emotional about it since it happened, because I just wished I could just take all the uncertainty away from them and let them know they were going to be okay. But you can't force people into that. And all you can say is, you know what? There's nothing you could have done to prepare for this. Not one thing. Like, human beings can't stop nature. We can't do it. Sometimes we can put it off for a while, but there's not a single thing you could have done to stop this from happening to you and to your neighbors. Like, nature doesn't hate us. Nature isn't doing something against us. We're part of it. And sometimes it uses us up because we are part of the resources. And it's just going to keep going no matter what we do. Like, there's nothing personal.
Now, another song on the record that you know, one of my personal favorites, which I'd like to play as part of the interview today, is Halls of Sarah. It's talk to me about, you know, going into the making of that and the collaboration and everything else, because the harmonies, it's exquisite.
Thank you.
But how did that particular one come to life? If you can remember, because
I remember. I mean, I was working on the lyrics, and I just started singing some stuff to Paul Rigby, who's my primary songwriting partner, and we were just messing around with it. We were in a hotel in Vancouver, and there were sirens going up and down Burrard Street. I don't know. We tend to work in a way where we come up with parts, and when the parts feel good, we don't necessarily fit them together right away. We leave them for a while. Like, I'm a big fan of setting something down and coming back to it later. But then when you have enough parts, then that's when you really push the idea and it becomes difficult or feels like a labor or is slightly painful.
It's the literal orchestration of a song, you know, connecting it and
yeah. Or like writing a song or writing a melody part with your voice and then realizing that, oh, just do it with your voice. You don't have to do that on a guitar. Like, there are several times where, you know, voices have been used as trumpets, or I don't know what the voices would have been used for, just a textural melody kind of in that song.
Tell me about the live set and how things have been going in the tour and what you feel about, you know, what's coming to life on the stage each night.
Well, I mean, a darkness that you speak of, there's a trillion ways to portray darkness or to translate it, and it's in there. And if people need to hear that, they will connect with that because it is in there. But as far as the actual performance is concerned, the band and I have been working really hard, and everybody really wants to be there, and we're really playing off of each other well. And so there's a nice thick sound, and there's a lot of singing, and I don't know, it's just felt really connected, and I've really been enjoying myself.
It's always great seeing you, and especially, you know, we know that you have to come out here to Northridge, and we always love when you come here, and let's continued great sense of community, great sense of creativity, and we look forward to seeing your smiling face every time you come by.
Thank you. And if you're coming tonight, please come early because Destroyer is playing.
Right.
And I'm so excited because he is one of my biggest influences as far as songwriting goes.
And what time do you know what his set time would be?
I think it's at 8, but I'm probably the worst person to ever ask about when our show is because I'm the worst rememberer of that.
Well, I'll give you a casual bit of LA advice. Always tell them it's a half hour earlier than it is. So we'll say it's 7:30, because no one in LA shows up on time. It's the 20 minutes fashionably late or traffic.
Got it.
All of the above. So by all means, get there and make sure you catch both Destroyer and, of course, Nico Gase. It's good having you here again live on 88.5.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
You got it.